So, welcome to the Retail Risk Podcast, sponsored by Sensormatic. My guest today is Luke Hudman, Group Loss Prevention Manager at McKesson. Luke served in the Army for 10 years, I understand, spending time both in the Arctic and the Arctic and Antarctic. So maybe that white shirt is a leftover from the camouflage that we had at that time. Security and loss prevention for 25 years. Luke's worked for a variety of companies in retail, wholesale and pharmaceutical, qualified counter-fraud specialist working with the National Health Service here in the UK as well. We'll perhaps come on to it. Luke has recently recovered from a bit of an injury, one of those dangerous things of getting off the couch. But when he's not sat on the couch, he is quite the fitness enthusiast. So, Luke, welcome.
Thank you.
My first question has to be, because we have an international audience, McKesson, brands we might know, footprint, online, in-store, what does the business do?
Okay, so McKesson UK, it's a pharmaceutical company. We're part of the bigger McKesson global family. And the brands within the group within the UK are Lloyds Pharmacy. Then you've got AAH Pharmaceuticals. So Lloyds Pharmacy is the retail aspect. And then you got AAH is the wholesale. We've also got Lloyds Pharmacy Clinical Home Care. And we've also John Bell and Croydon and Central London. We're in partner with Echo, who is delivering the online experience for our patients. And then we've got Lloyds Pharmacy Online as well.
Well, and so do you have responsibility and a sight into all of those parts of the business?
So, yeah, so myself and my team, we're a group function. So we basically have access to information from our manufacturers all the way through to our patients. So at any point in time, if there's a concern, a compliance issue, or something needs to be looked at in any way and we're asked to become involved, then we can track a product from the moment we receive it from our manufacturer all the way through the wholesaling, through the delivery, through the pharmacy, and then even to the customer's hands. So wow. Yeah, we look after everything.
Huge. So just going back a step, that's what you do on a day-to-day. But when you were thinking to yourself, okay, it's time to leave the army or whatever the process was, did you sit down and go, do you know what? I really want to be a group loss prevention manager. This is how does that join together? Obviously the army gives you a great set of skills, but join up the dots for me on how that happened.
It happened more by chance than it did as in a career choice. When I left the army as a qualified mechanic. So, but when I came out, I couldn't get a job as a mechanic because I was too overqualified. So I took a job as a uniform security guard working for an old company called Reliance Security in the UK, started with them, and then basically moved around uniform guarding companies, ending with the Corps of Commissionaires. And then I got an opportunity to work for Asda Stores Limited within Bristol. And that's where I got my introduction into loss prevention. So it was a security manager's role, but it was dealing with stock, wastage, PI counts, and accountability for what was happening to the stock. So it wasn't just dealing with theft and theft investigations. What was happening with counters, how much were we wasting, working with them with deliveries and orders. That's literally how I came into loss prevention.
Wow. And then, so I mean, you literally have been right at the front end in the guarding aspect of security as well. So let's go right up to today. The stores are, the pharmacies are all open. What does your day-to-day look like? What lands on your desk? What takes up the bulk of your time?
Well, for us, because we interact with so many businesses with the group, no 2 days are the same. So we have the same the same issues as every other loss prevention manager has, be it in retail or any other element of business. So stock adjustments, cash, refunds, compliance. So we deal with all of that, same as everybody else. But on top of that, we also have to deal with the regulations imposed on us through the UK of dealing with drugs. So the security of the drugs, controlled drugs in retail, the PI counts and the accountability of the drugs within retail, but then also within wholesale. So when we get deliveries coming in from our manufacturers, if there's issues with that, that can be flagged to us so we can investigate that. Again, stock counted and stock takes within our warehouse. And then we're dealing with the MHRA, the regulatory body, in conjunction with our own regulatory team. So if there's issues, say we got stock adjustment that we need to look into, we work in partnership with our regulatory team. If we get information from police, MHRA, or manufacturers of diversions from outside of our business, you know, how are we ensuring the protection of our products? But then within my role, I also deal with two other areas. One is counterterrorism, and two is counter fraud. So for me, there is no standard day. We get the usual stuff, like I said, with the normal retailing, but I can deal with retail, wholesale, online, then deal with officials, MHRA, GPHC, so the UK's regulatory bodies for pharmaceutical, and then engage with all the regulatory teams within the business. So it can be really, really diverse, and you know, it keeps you sharp.
And so with all of those, you know, areas of, you know, responsibility, what do you find are the, you know, I'm fascinated with the sort of the, you know, the regulatory oversight, if you like. Is it organized crime gangs that are trying to get hold of the drugs? Is it internal infiltration? I mean, where does the threat come from, if you like?
So one of the most interesting parts, obviously, during the pandemic, where all the borders were shut down from all the countries around the world. So from that point of view, you've got the raw ingredients of the illicit drug trade is pretty much shut down, because they can't get the raw ingredients into the countries. So then you find that organized crime gangs are turning to like home brews to be able to sell on to people who need these products. And then it's getting the knowledge base from that to then share with the police forces. Because, of course, our police forces are not experts in that area. They're experts in crime. They have experts on drug, you know, controlled drug liaison officers and other officers that in organized crime who know about this stuff. But your normal police officers on the beat or in the cars, they're not aware of these. So it's sharing that information with these people to go, look, this is what's going on. This is where the threat is coming from, because different areas of the UK have different areas of risk. And it's not all about London. You know, there's other areas of the UK that are higher risk. And so it's sharing that information. So over the last year, it's for me gaining that knowledge, talking to the regulatory people who have the information, or the drug action teams. So telling us what is available on the streets right now, what are people using? Do we need to do something different? Do we need to protect something different? Then monitoring the trends of either stock ordering, be that internal or external, deliveries, stock write-offs, and then building up a profile, and then engaging with, again, the outside agencies to go, is there a risk? Is there a threat? But then when communities come together, being a part of that bigger conversation, so we have a voice, so the pharmaceutical industry has that voice and go, yeah, we can see this, or we can see attempts at trying to get this, so we're making everybody aware.
So in that situation, you're quite right, you know, the police have got a broad brush of expertise. Do you find often that you're the lead technical expert in these, and are you then sort of almost packaging up the, you know, the issue and presenting it to the police?
Yeah, so there's obviously it's not just me. Obviously within the pharmaceutical industry, there's a number of people in similar positions to me. But yeah, we are, you know, we are the go-to people for the police officers. And if they need advice and support, be it from one of the other multiples, they will reach out to their head of loss prevention or head of security. I have contacts that I keep in regular information flow with them. Mm. So if they ever need my help and support on a specific product, or if there's a trend going around in a certain area, then it's like, right, we can look at ourselves. Yeah, can we see anything? Can we help and support? Or have we learned from the General Pharmaceutical Council or the MHRA? Yeah, is there information sharing there that we can provide to the police, or even join the dots and go, well, officer from Officer X, me, Officer B from the MHRA, you're both looking at the same thing. There we go. And we step away, but we've created that link.
Cool. So I want to get an understanding of your team and also how you personally perhaps report into the board and get influence for what you want to do. But before I come back and delve into that, we're just going to take a brief 30-second interlude and take a word from our sponsors, Sensormatic.
Now, more than ever, retailers and shopping centres need to create efficient and safe shopping destinations that can thrive in the most challenging of market conditions. Sensormatic Solutions uniquely combines insights into loss and liability, shopper insights and inventory visibility to help you power operational excellence and deliver frictionless, secure, personalised shopper experiences while driving revenue. Visit us at sensormatic.com to learn more.
Okay, so for my team, I have quite a small team. So I only have a team of six, specifically chosen. So for my team, they're all experts in different fields. So if we have a problem, to coin a phrase, the answer is in the room. So if we've got a specific problem, I can bring my team together and I'll have one who's a specialist in physical security, one who's a specialist in stock, one who's a specialist in IT, et cetera, et cetera. So we can all work together to resolve a problem. And that's how I like it to be. So each loss prevention manager brings a skill set to the table, and each other loss prevention manager can learn from the other or share in that skill. I have one of my team, Jez Milam. He's a prevent officer. So where I'm the prevent lead for McKesson Group dealing with counterterrorism, he's my investigator. So he's got all the expertise and contacts with all the counterterrorism teams. And, you know, we've been able to do stuff quite successfully through that. But he's always sharing his skills and his contacts with the rest of the team. With our board, I mean, I report into Chris Keane, who's the chief financial officer for McKesson. And yeah, very simply, if there's a loss to the business or a compliance issue, then it is our aim to look at it, explore it, and where we can, investigate and fix it. And if we can't, it's to then reach out to other departments within the business to then resolve that problem and come up with the solution. If it requires investment, justify the investment, as we all have to do, and then put that solution in place. And that's literally what we do day in, day out. If we're flagged up with something, what is the problem? Let's work through it. Start, what is the problem? What do we need to eradicate the problem? But then do we have systems simply that can do it? Or do we need to invest in things? If we need to invest, then we engage with procurement, you know, go through the procurement route for tendering, et cetera, and then put the solution to the board. I know our monthly reports are shared. I share them obviously with Chris Keane, our boss, and our CEO, Toby Anderson. He sees them and we get questions. We get feedback. Could be they want the board wants more information or, you know, is there a wider risk to the business? So we then go and engage with the key stakeholders and then provide that information. So it's about keeping the board reassured in what we're doing, what we're finding, what we're resolving, and the solutions that we're providing.
And it sounds with, you know, reporting direct to the FD that's on the board, would it be fair to say, you know, I'm always fascinated. You hear people saying, oh, we don't really have a voice. We don't get invited in. I get the impression you get invited in if there's a change within the business or your opinion sought. Would that be fair to say?
Very much so. Within the world we sit in, yes, we very much have a voice. If we're asked for opinion, yeah, it is listened to. And you know, I have regular contact with my boss. And yeah, you know, if he has a concern, he'll share it with me straight away. I'll go and find the answer, bring it back. But if there's something that's not right, then I will tell my boss. You know, it's black and white. There's no rose-tinted specs. Something's wrong. If he needs to know, then I'll make sure he knows about it. And then if he needs to go and question another senior member of the business over it, then so be it. But I've given him my view, my opinion. And then that's down, you know, where that goes is, you know, that's down to him.
Cool. So around the world, you know, in the first quarter or so of 2021, stores have been opening back up again. Obviously, large bits of your business have been open all the way through. But as we sort of look to a little bit of normal, what are you focusing on for 2021? Is there a project that was already, you know, coming to bear? Is it, you know, well, other than the day to day, what's the couple of bigger pictures?
At the moment, we haven't got a lot in the bigger picture right now. For me and my team, is getting back to basics. So, yeah, we have been operating throughout the pandemic. And through that, you know, it's been difficult for everyone. And we've had to make changes and things have had to be looked at in a different way. So supporting our operations teams, we've had to look at what our policies and procedures look like. Can we do things slicker? So saving time. So one of my team, Katrina McDonald, is on the Sigma 6 program. So she looks at the processes. Can we smooth those processes out and make them easier and simpler for the teams, still driving the correct actions and outputs at the end and the compliance? But it's then, are we giving back time to the teams so they spend more time focusing on the customer? And then it's how do we bring everything back together so we go back to the normal operating world without hopefully all these restrictions in place? And so that's what they're all focused on right now. It's what I call the brilliant basics. So if we can work with our operations team, which we do well, deliver those brilliant basics, we all get out of this pandemic, hopefully globally, this comes to an end. And then it's just that smooth transition. There's no great leap that we got, oh, right, out of the pandemic's policy and procedures back to the normal operating world. So that's what our thing is, what we're focusing on right now.
Yeah, and you know, that it's such a cliche, isn't it? The back to basics. But I'm a huge fan. From time to time, you just need to go and do that, don't you? Just take stock and go, okay. And the basics were probably written down, I'm guessing, 5 or 10 years ago, almost in a manual of the basics. But slippage happens, doesn't it? And just, you know, life gets in the way and things aren't as great as they were.
And we've had to adapt as well. So a whole way of working over the last year has totally had to change. So what those basics were that we wrote, 10, 20 years ago, you know, that manual's got thrown in the bin and we've had to start all over again. So that's why we've taken this time now to review, right, what was the brilliant basics? What does that look like in this world? And then how do we make that transition into the new working world? I mean, interviews, investigations, for argument's sake, whole different world now. The investigation still went on during a pandemic, but we had to do them differently. We had to look at different ways of doing things, you know, collection of evidence, presentation of evidence, just doing a simple interview. You couldn't do a face-to-face interview. So how do you do that? Working with the HR team, how do we still make these things happen? So that's where we are. That's what we're looking at.
Yeah, great thing to focus on. Now, I'm always interested to know, most senior individuals have always got a sort of go-to piece of technology, favorite something or other that you just couldn't do without. And occasionally that could just be a trusty Excel spreadsheet that's got some, you know, formulas worked into it. But what's the sort of the one piece of LP risk, loss prevention tech that, or maybe process that you just couldn't do without?
I found that one a quite difficult question to answer. And the one thing I keep coming back to, and it's not technology, and it's actually my team.
Okay.
Is the one thing I can't work without. And I say that because I had to furlough over half my team. And when you're dealing with a company as big as ours, and we're a small team, and then you take on all that responsibility. So you've got a team of six looking after a large number of companies. You halve that team, and then you're taking it all on. That it was a big ask. And, you know, our days are long, as they are for everyone. But that was huge. And it gave me more, as a team leader, more, I wouldn't say insight, not even appreciation, but it made me realize, you know, to coin a phrase, you don't know what you got until you've lost it. And for them, you know, it was a massive, massive gap. Those areas of expertise, I was quite lucky. I could still phone my team members up. You know, I'm stuck. I need a solution. You know, what do you think the best solution is? Or, you know, drop a text, or, you know, there were still those little touch points. But that was the one thing I would not want to go through that again.
No.
So of everything, yeah, I'd lose my iPhone, lose my iPad, lose my Excel spreadsheets, my tracking devices, covert CCTV. I'd lose all of that if I could just keep my team.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, more than many are having experienced that, that reality of late of losing part of them, then I get why that's front and center. And this might be the other half to that question. And you might give an answer that's linked to that, but the FD says, okay, you know, we've just found a spare million down the back of the, you know, boardroom sofa. Luke, we're going to give it to you to invest in a piece of kit, piece of technology, or something to do your job even better than you currently do. What would you spend it on? And a Ferrari doesn't count as an answer.
Sorry?
And a Ferrari doesn't count as an answer.
So for me, there's one piece of, I want to say software. It's more of the Excel spreadsheet that myself and an old friend of mine created, Roger Wood, who's not long retired from loss prevention. And we created a document that shows us low level theft or fraud of drugs. So, you know, obviously you get the big ones, you get the big numbers, they go to the very top of any sheet or any document, but it's the little ones that you don't necessarily get to see. And this was a formula we created, you know, one of those in the car chats. And we've never got it to be able to automate it. It works, but it's hand cranked. So if I had, you know, if I was like, you know, money is endless, then I'll get that to automate, because we look over quite a wide range of products, but it's not everything. And if I had the opportunity to put everything through it, then yeah, I would, because I think that would change. It would change the way that I think we, as investigators, look at stock adjustments, and it would also give us all the detail that we're missing. So that would be the one thing. And plus, on top of that, with any spare change, I'd go out and buy more loss prevention managers.
Yeah. I must admit, from what you'd said before, I thought that would be on the radar. But if we've got any vendors listening that have got some spare cash and want to develop Luke's product, then when you're ready for the next chapter, maybe you'll be open to a phone call and a conversation. I often find, you know, people in the industry and as well-rounded as people like yourself, they come up with these sort of little twists and turns that you only get from working that close to the coalface. So yeah, who knows, maybe that will see the light of day at some point. I should look forward to maybe we'll see you behind a booth somewhere with you know, peddling your wares out to lots of retailers. Now I've got to ask you, because you know, a wealth of experience and always a very considered answer, the future of retail. So let's do 1 to 5 years. What are you planning for, and what on earth's going on with it, do you think?
So for our business, it's definitely moving forward with the digital world. So yeah, I've seen a lot of information and a lot of progress in how we move forward in the digital world. And for me, and my opinion over the next 5 years, I think that's going to be the way forward. It's almost like going back to the late 80s with the digital explosion. And I think the pandemic has just shown we need it from a certain point of view. We've moved so far forward in technology that the sat on your sofa ordering your patio set, yeah, it was always coming. There's always a way of the future. And we've seen businesses, you know, some big names recently in the UK fall foul of not exploring and not investing into the digital market, that they're no longer with us. And so I think that's the way that a lot of retailers are going to go. But I really do hope that the high street comes back to life again, because you've got, you know, the entrepreneurs of the future are going to come forward, where that is going to be now opportunity, which obviously for the UK is going to be growth, you know, growth in GP, jobs, security, and then, you know, we can grow again. But we are going to need that digital environment, because the new generation that are coming through, their life is spent with a smart device. Yeah, be it on your hand, in your wrist, you know, what's next? We even saw, you know, was it the glasses with the internet?
Yes, yeah.
What's the next device that is going to come forward? What is going to be the next solution that, you know, the person's thinking of? So, yeah, for me, I think it is going to be a dot-com explosion again, but I really do hope and pray that the high street comes back, you know, the thrill of the chase of the sale, but to be able to go out, get what you want, buy what you want, and bring it home, and you're not waiting for a delivery date. So that's the way I see the next, at least the next 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I'm a fan of going into a physical store and then placing my order with a very charming and agreeable young man or young woman, and then the product arriving the next day. Or, you know, we were in Zara recently and didn't have the right size for one of my children, and somebody jumps up, orders it, yes, we've got that, and it'll almost be at your home before you get there with the bag you're leaving the store with. I mean, that blend is I just think, you know, magnificent and exciting for the high street.
Yeah, speaking to a colleague who knows the product that you want to buy, can give you some advice and support before you purchase it, instead of trawling through 200 reviews, of which in the back of your mind, you're questioning how many of these are actually genuine before you purchase it. And then you make your purchase and then you're going, great, now I've got to send it back. I'm with you. I hope it does come back, because yeah, going back to that world where you can just stand and talk and ask, and yeah, that's what you want, and you walk out a happy person.
Yeah, good old fashioned, you know, connection and interaction. I think there's a lot to be said for it. And, you know, it's got to make for happier customers spending more. I mean, we spoke just before we came on air about the queues outside of Primark. You know, clearly, you know, a brand everybody knows, I'm sure, and you know, they're clearly doing something right and connecting with their customers. So others, I think, just have to follow suit and understand who they're selling to.
Yeah, but I mean, like we were saying, Primark is an example because they don't have that online or digital offering. Yeah, like we were saying, yeah, as soon as we came out of the first lockdown, first thing we see on the news is people queuing outside Primark. Fantastic for them, and absolutely great. So they're the exception to the rule. So, and I'm sure there's going to be many other businesses that can say the same thing, that they are the exception to the rule. But I just think there's going to be a world that we need to get involved in. And, the retailers of the future definitely need that digital footprint to just maximize their opportunity. And it's obviously a growth area for profit.
Yeah, absolutely. Luke, it's always a pleasure to catch up. Thank you so much indeed for being my guest today. It's absolute pleasure to have your thoughts, insight, expertise, and I hope we will see you again in person where we can get back together in the very near future. But for now, Luke, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.